welcome to the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I am your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS or at HP Basketball if you like in-depth videos on the intricacies of AT&T Center's labyrinth-like bowels of that arena, because I just had to take a video last night of how insane that arena. Like, you hear stories of them having bats and rats and various vermin in there. And
snakes. Don't forget snakes.
And snakes. And then you go there and you're like, this makes sense. Like, it just makes sense that that's how this place is. You can find that at HP Basketball. Joining me is James Herbert. He is at Outside the NBA. We are going to talk in segments today. I got this trick from Zach Lowe and his podcast with David Thorpe. And I'm going to steal it, and we're going to do timers because I want to stay on task today, because I just got in from Houston. I'm going to need food. I need to kind of chill out. I just drove in from San Antonio, and the drive was hellish with lots of traffic, and so we're going to keep this tight and in control and maintain the energy and up-tempo. It's about tempo, because the Rockets don't need pace, they need tempo, but we're going to get to that in a minute. Right now, we're going to start off with a 10-minute segment. We're going to talk about the Utah Jazz. Their season ended on Sunday, on Monday, versus the Golden State Warriors in a sweep. So here we go. We're going to spend 10 minutes on the Jazz and go. Okay, so James, my question for you to start is this. Is there any point in bringing back the core? Do you bring back George Hill if Gordon Hayward leaves, and do you bring back Gordon Hayward if George Hill leaves?
I think you bring back Gordon Hayward if George Hill leaves. I'm not sure you bring back George Hill if Gordon Hayward leaves, because if Hayward leaves, then all of a sudden you're looking at kind of a longer path. Like, you're looking at building something. Like, you kind of set back a couple of years, right? And if that's the case, then you might as well elevate Dante Exum. You might as well try to develop him instead of having him stuck behind George Hill. And keep in mind, if you keep George Hill, you're going to have to pay him a significant amount of money. And that's worth it if you have a team that you think is on the cusp of something special. And I just don't think you have that team if Hayward's gone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's what I've been kind of fascinated by. I started to realize it because we kind of think of the Jazz as this young team that's on the up and way, and they're going to be together for a while. And then you realize, like, no, like, this could have been a one and done for them. They worked so hard to build this team up into a playoff team. They finally make it this year. They secure the 5 seed. They topple the Clippers. They make it to the second round. And yet, if Hayward leaves, they're done. Like, they're back to ground zero because they've got Rudy Gobert and they've got Rodney Hood, and both those guys are good. And I think Hood probably just had like a down year and will recover, because he was really good last year, and he just, you know, injuries and whatever else kind of bothered him. And I think Derek Favors probably gets it together, and I still like Dante Exum's long-term potential. I think that he can wind up being a good guard. But, you know, if they lose Hayward, they're back into that pack with Denver and Portland and the Wolves and all these other teams. And that's got to be really concerning, I think, if you're that team is looking at, like, man, we have to pay Gordon Hayward whatever he wants and keep him no matter what. Bill Simmons suggested on his podcast, he's like, well, they didn't want to keep him, and they let him go out and get an offer, but it was in restricted free agency, and Hayward wasn't the player he is now. If Hayward was the player he is now, then they would have just paid him. But, you know, he wasn't. They let him test the market, and the Hornets wound up giving him a max offer sheet, which they immediately matched. They telegraphed that pretty well. I don't think he necessarily holds that against them, especially with how they've kind of built a team around him. Like, they haven't done any hijinks with Hayward, right? Like, they're not like, they didn't bring in another wing to try and, like, say, like, well, it's an open competition or any of those dumb moves that dumb franchises make. Like, they've said, like, no, Gordon Hayward's our guy. Like, he's a key player for us, probably our best player. You can argue Rudy Gobert is, but you're wrong. It's Gordon Hayward because of his offensive versatility. And so I also just tend to, here's my question is, we know Hayward is, like, he's a family dude, and he likes video games, and he's not.
Loves video games.
He could do it professionally if he wanted to. I don't see him as a guy that's going to be like, I really love that New York nightlife. I need to get to LA so I can make movies. Like, that doesn't seem like the kind of guy that he is. He seems much more likely to be like, this team drafted me. They believed in me. They gave me the most money anybody has. They did give me a max when it was matched, and they're offering me a max contract now. Now, if they screw around and they say, like, well, we'll give you the 4 year but not the fifth, well, okay, now you're just being dumb and you're tempting him. This is the same thing that the Hawks did with Al Horford. Like, he's your best player. Give him the most money. But if they don't screw around with it, I don't see any reason for him not to just to stay home.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I'd be pretty surprised if he went elsewhere. I mean, the Celtics remain intriguing because of what they've built there and their relationship with Stevens. But I mean, that's not simple also. Like they would have to clear a bunch of salary, and also he'd be going there not to be like the guy. Like, he would be another guy.
Yeah, and that may be the best thing for him. Like, that may be the best chance for him to win a title, because I don't think he can win a title with Gordon Hayward as your best player. But I also think of it this way. So, if you talk to Marc Gasol about the idea of playing with his brother, like, Marc Gasol is very much like, yeah, that'd be great. Because, like, Gasol doesn't want to deal with questions about that every day. Like, if Gordon Hayward goes to Boston, it's not just the questions in Boston, because the guys in Boston will run those stories out at the beginning of the season. It'll be awesome. Like, from August through September, he'll have to deal with that in Boston. But then every trip he takes, he's going to get asked about the relationship between him and Brad Stevens and how he coached him in college. And, like, it's going to be incessant. Every single day, they're both going to have to deal with that. And that's...
Yeah, he'd have to really want to do it if he was going to do it.
Yeah, and you could say, like, well, is that really bet worse? Like, is that more important than... Then, you know, playing for Brad, who he believes in? No, but it's a factor because he's got a good coach in Quinn Snyder that's done a lot with him and made the most of him. You know,
I think that's really important. Like, I think even if you're going to look back to the beginning of Hayward's career and say, well, he didn't have an awesome relationship with Corbin, or like, well, he would have preferred that the Jazz just made him an offer and kept him instead of waiting to match whatever he got in restricted free agency and like, sort of screwed around there. Even if there was a point where he wasn't happy, like, look what they've done since then. Like, he and Quinn Snyder have an amazing relationship. I think they've built a team around him that fits his style of play. They've helped him grow into the player that he is today. I mean, the improvement that he made, like, from 2 years ago to last year, and then again from last year to this year, it's incredible. He's a totally different player. And I think it would be hard for him to give that up and go somewhere else unless it was an incredible situation. I mean, you saw how the season ended with the fans chanting his name. Like, he really has something there. And I think if he was that beloved in Utah, but they were like not that good, or they were like an old team with a bunch of guys that were going to drop off, I think that'd be a little different. But he has a bunch of guys that can still grow with him. I think he really loves playing with Gobert. I think they still have some things to figure out in terms of team building, which we can get to. But I think it's a really great situation, and I think they should be considered the massive favorites to sign him.
There's going to be a conversation about like Miami, and I'm just like, look, I just do not see him being like, yeah, I'm not going to play with Rudy Gobert. I'm going to go play with Hassan Whiteside. Oh, really? I get to play with Rodney Hood? Oh, well, I get to go play with Dion Waiters over there. Or, oh, man, George Hill? Well, there is Goran Dragic. Come on. No. No. Like, this is not a thing. Stop trying to make this a thing. If the Heat makes, like, several moves to make some sort of super team this summer, which obviously Pat Riley can do. He's done it before. Okay, but I don't really see it. Do you think that this team needs to make substantial changes outside? Let's say they bring back Hayward. Do you think they need to make substantial changes to what they've got? How do they get to the next level? How do they get to a point where they're a threat to the Warriors? I don't know if that's possible, really, because we're talking about the Rockets and Spurs, who are two very good teams, and no one really believes that either one has a shot to legitimately beat them. But is there a way to get closer? How do they get closer to Golden State?
Honestly, I think a lot of it is going to rely on internal improvement. I don't think you're going to go out. I don't even think you're going to – like, you don't have the chance to have the sort of offseason they had last year where they added three veterans to the team in Hill, Joe Johnson, and Boris Diaw. It's just – it's going to be really difficult now because of the financial situation. And I think, in fact, they might have to take a little bit of a step sideways or backwards before getting better because they're not going to be able to pay everyone. Because, yeah, Gordon Hayward's contract and George Hill is this summer. Let's say they keep them. Rodney Hood and Dante Exum are up for extensions this summer.
Yikes.
And then next year they will be free agents. So that is why I would not be surprised at all if Derek Favors is traded this summer. And if it's not for anything that significant, because the contract they'll have to give him next year, in addition to those two young guys, like something has to give there. And I think you have Trey Lyles, who didn't play really at all in the playoffs, and who I thought they were pretty high on, that can step into a bigger role. And they have Exum that can step into a bigger role and might end up being the starter for this team if Hill leaves. I think everyone should will still be able to be excited about this team next year, but I'm not sure if it'll even be as deep of a team as it was this year, and that was one of their biggest strengths. So it's kind of a tough question. Like, I think you can still get internal improvement from their core, because their core is basically, to me, it's Hayward, Hood, and Gobert. Hill might be a part of that core. We don't know. Like, that San Antonio situation seems really appealing for him this summer if the Spurs make a move or two. So they could end up losing him and they take a step back. But I think those three guys can still get better. Now, how much better? Like, Hayward is already a max caliber player. I don't know how much more you want from him. But I think you're looking at growth from those guys, and then you're hoping that Exum and Lyles develop into the kind of players that the front office thought they'd be when they drafted them.
I kind of think they should let Hill go, and the reason is you talked about the guys that they're going to have to extend. They've got everybody locked up through 2018 outside of Shelvin Mack and George Hill. That's the only two really significant – and Joe Ingles, who they're probably going to lose, and that's a bummer, and he's right. really valuable. But maybe they can bring him back, and that'd be fine. They could probably find some sort of moderate deal for him. If you let Hill go, and maybe you can I don't know what the cap hold is going to look like. I have to crunch the numbers on what the cap hold would be for retaining Hayward but not signing him, and then signing him after you go get somebody else. If you clear favors off of the cap, they're at $91 million guaranteed for next year with a 102 cap. So if they clear off favors – and they let everybody and let those other guys go, then that winds up getting you at least a little bit closer to having, you know, if you're able to get it down to 70 whatever million dollars, the $79 million, and you've got a little bit of wiggle room with like a $13 million, $15 million cap hold, you might be able to go get a decent starting point guard and then figure some stuff out later. Because I think the key is, all right, let's reconfigure. We're going to have Hayward, Gobert, and Hood, and then if Hood doesn't develop, we'll move him, and if not, then we'll build around those guys, and we'll just kind of plug pieces in. But Hill's age and injury, I think, is a concern, and I think that locking yourself into that situation, if you re-sign George Hill, you are saying we intend to contend with this group, and we kind of know that that's not going to be the case. Like, unless Rodney Hood makes absolutely astronomical jumps, or Trey Lyles, or Dante Exum. I mean, we are talking unexpected superstar wow, then I think you have to be concerned about a limit on that team. Versus if you just keep it kind of tighter, I think you can probably get there. All right, that's 10 minutes. I want to switch.
I just want to say one thing before.
After the buzzer, overtime, go.
Overtime. I won't even deal with George Hill. Anyone who's listened to this podcast know that I think George Hill is an incredible fit for that team and is so good.
He's great. That's not my argument.
Yeah, I know. But just it, even I am guilty of like, yeah, just dump favor salary and move on. And like, we say that, but that's also a tough thing for an organization to do. Like, they drafted him, or they didn't draft him. They traded, he was in the Darren Williams trade. They developed him. They extended him off his rookie contract. He like grew to like love Salt Lake City and lives there year round. And like, he like when healthy is still like a damn good front court player. Now his fit with Rudy Gobert is a different question and all that, but it's like we're treating these decisions like they're so simple, and I think there's evidence that those two were best kind of like they were in the playoffs not playing together, but I still think like they're probably intrigued by the idea of zigging when other teams zagging and having those two bigs and just being that awesome defensive team because of what those two guys can do together. So I'm not sure it'll be as simple a decision as we're making it out to be with regard to favors. That's all I wanted to say.
Guys, if you're looking for the best seats that you're going to be able to find and the best prices for them, you've got to check out the SeatGeek app. And I'm going to tell you how you can get $20 back just by listening to this podcast, which is great because that can buy you like hot dogs and beer at a game. So SeatGeek is the smartest way to find tickets for the basketball games you want to see up close this season. We've still got the conference finals coming up, obviously the finals, baseball's in session. There's all these games you want to go to, and SeatGeek is going to get you there. With SeatGeek, you're always going to get the best deal because SeatGeek price compares across multiple sites. The prices are going to vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest one. Plus, they're going to make sure you get the most bang for your buck because they're going to assign it a grade based on value. They're going to give your tickets a power ranking and let you know what seats are going to be able to get you the best value for the price. Plus, every ticket that you buy on SeatGeek is backed by a 100% guarantee. Best of all, like I said, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you got to do, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code IEYE, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code I today. Okay. All right. So we're going to do 10 minutes on Rockets, Spurs, and go. So the Spurs won game 5 last night. Kawhi Leonard gets hurt. Tony Parker's already out. And they still managed to win that game. And I don't like the narrative that's building around this, because I tried to fight it a little bit last night on Twitter. I was like, look, I get Kawhi was out. This was not an embarrassing loss for Houston. They are exhausted. Both teams are at the end of a long fight, and they are just swinging haymakers and trying to land. And the Rockets had good looks that they missed, and a lot of random bounces didn't go their way. I thought the officiating really leaned towards what San Antonio wants. It wasn't preferable towards San Antonio. It was, you were allowed to swipe as much as possible, and you were getting touch fouls on the perimeter. That helps San Antonio. That is what San Antonio wants. They want to be able to do whatever inside to disrupt Harden on drives and to be able to muscle and body inside, and that's what they did. And so I thought that a lot went against the Rockets' way, and they still had a chance to win. The Rockets, I am confident, at this point in the series, I feel good about this. The Rockets are the better team in this series. They may not win. And if they do not win, it will not be surprising. It is very close. These teams are very, very even. The Rockets got more three-pointers. They're getting transition points. The Spurs had 18. I think they had 18 offensive... That's too high. They had a ton of offensive rebounds.
And I mean, that's basically the reason they're winning the series.
Well, to a degree. But here's the number that I was looking for. It is... Come on, baby. Why are you slow now? The reality is that their points per possession, like Aldridge had 8 offensive rebounds, and and yet he only had 6 made buckets at one point. Like that's a crazy number. Second chance points. The Spurs had 18 offensive rebounds and 19 second chance points. Like, and not all of them were tap back, miss, finally put back. Like, they weren't able to score effectively on offensive rebounds. They were able to generate those, but the Rockets had 16 second chance points. Like, the gap wasn't huge. If you get offensive rebounds and don't score off of them, it doesn't matter. So,
I still think there's, like, when you're playing a team that plays like the Rockets do and launches as many threes as they do and also plays only 7 guys, like, if you can make them just defend for longer, like, if you can make them play extra defensive possessions, if you can get your offense more possessions and more shots than they get when you know they're going to take more threes, when you know they want to push the pace, and when you know they're only going to play 7 or 8 guys, like, I do think there's a sort of hard to quantify, like, benefit to that that goes beyond just, okay, they didn't score that much on the second chance opportunities. But I get what you're saying. It's not all attributable to that.
Well, and it's just like they're not getting the edge there that they would need for me to be like, they're just killing them there. You know, they're just dominating this on the offensive glass. And it's like, look, they're beating them, but the Rockets know that they're going to beat them. Like, part of this is, all right, so this is kind of the battle, and the coaches have talked about this. Mike D'Antoni knows that they're going to get out-rebounded. It's about how much and how many points do they give up. Greg right. Popovich knows that they're going to shoot a lot of threes. It's about how many they shoot and how many they make. Like, that's really what this battle comes down to, is those two elements. And last night, those two teams combined to miss 53s.
It got so ugly in the fourth, man.
They were done. Like, I didn't like the Rockets' energy from the beginning. I kept expecting San Antonio to pull away. I kept waiting for the Spurs to go on an 8-0, a 10-0, a 12-0 run, and it just never came. They're both gassed. Harden is gassed. He's still sick. He's still banged up, and he's worn out from battling guys on switches. He's done a really good job in the post. They are not scoring on him. It's hilarious to me being in that building. The Spurs fans get all excited whenever Harden or Gasol get the ball in the post versus Harden. And they're like, here we go. Cook a barbecue. Like, one fan behind me last night was like, barbecue chicken, baby. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, you're not going to beat Harden in the post. It's the one area he's good at. Clang, clang. Also, because the guys that they have, both of those guys are going to the fadeaway jumper. They're going to go to the fadeaway jumper because Harden's not going to let him get to the baseline, and they're going to shove him out on hook. So you're only heading away from the basket in that situation. And yet the Spurs won. Because this is like the most important thing that we have to talk about for the last of the second segment. Manu Ginobili is a hero. He is a damn hero.
Just make this a Manu Ginobili appreciation podcast
for
right
the
now.
Times. Like, I mean, look, Manu Ginobili is a player that since the mid-2000s has driven me insane. The first player that I ever was like, God, stop flopping, was Manu Ginobili. He was the first guy. And to me, he is still, more than Vlade, because Vlade was a big man. The modern game is predicated on perimeter flopping, and Manu is the godfather of that. But look, at 39 years of age, with Kawhi Leonard out, Manu did everything. Passing, running the offense, the block to win the game. It was amazing. And I wrote about this last night. This is my post-game column, because we've talked about it in the podcast, and if you listen to this podcast, you know, like I look at advanced metrics, and I look at X's and O's. But I do believe in things like culture and the Spurs culture, pounding the rock, the approach that they take to everything, the high character guys that they keep in their organization, the discipline that they play with. That's how they won that game, is they have guys who buy into those things that you need when you're not going to get your crossover and you're not going to get your superstar and you don't have when you're, I don't like using this cliche, but backs up against the wall. And you got to find a way to win a game that is exhausting and tough and brutal and you're outgunned and there's a lot of reasons for you to quit. The Spurs just keep their cool and they just keep coming at you. And really, honestly, like Monta Ginobili in his postgame said, that was a coin flip game. It could have gone either way. Yeah. I love the respect these two teams have for each other. And I'm not trying to be a moralist about it. It's fine. Like, trash talk's really fun. It is. I love Draymond Green for how much of a jerk he is. It's amazing. He's the most entertaining figure in the league right now. But the Warriors and Cavs have such outright disrespect for their opponents. It's really refreshing to watch this series and see two teams that have a tremendous amount of respect for each other. And that goes from the coaches and the organizations and the GMs on down. These two teams have battled each other. They are division rivals. They have gone at each other. Harden is obviously a longtime Spurs killer. And there is just a ton of respect between these two franchises. And it's really cool to watch.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And I think it truly was a coin flip. Like, the Rockets, like you said it at the start, like, the narrative that they, like, it was an embarrassing loss because Kawhi wasn't out there. Or, like, they really should have won. Like, I don't really buy that. Like, both teams were kind of gasping for air, and San Antonio ended up winning. But, like, Harden could very well have tied it on that three if Manu hadn't made that play. Like, we don't know. And I think Ginobili just had an awesome game. Like, it wasn't just that. Like, he had 12 points. It felt like more. He had that amazing dunk. His energy was there all game. His timing was there all game. He had 5 assists, as well. And he just looked, like he hadn't in some time. And on the flip side, like, it's weird with the Rockets, because I think throughout the playoffs, and especially the last couple of games, like, they haven't really looked like the Rockets to me. Like, the offense hasn't had that same kind of flow and energy and all that, but, like, they're still competing like crazy, and, like, they beat the Thunder without really looking like themselves for that much of it too. So even though, like, we're going into this 6th and 7th game, and I'm thinking, like, I don't know if Houston can get back to being itself, but it's also like that, like, they almost had the last game. And they don't have to play perfect Houston Rockets basketball to win. They just have to kind of get by. And I at this point, I really hope it goes 7. It's it hasn't been the exact series that we all thought it would be, because there have been blowouts.
Yeah.
But I still think it's been a really compelling series. It's been full of adjustments on both sides. And I truly have no idea what the hell is going to happen. Like, regardless, like, clearly if Kawhi misses the next game and he's questionable right now, then Houston has a massive advantage. But, I mean, aside from that, I couldn't make a prediction.
As far as going 7, my wife wants you to shut your mouth right now. Shut your mouth right now in regards to a game 7. I'm going home.
That's fair.
I'm going home for games 1 and 2 of the Western Conference Finals. I'm going to pick it back up in Texas. And so my wife's very excited about a 5-day stretch where she's not the only one. She's not single parenting 2 kids. So there's my wife is a Spurs fan tomorrow night for the first time in her life.
Wow, okay.
So there's a lot that goes into this. Kawhi Leonard obviously hurt. He was stretching it out with a band. That was what was concerning to me, is they weren't icing it. They were trying to stretch it, with a band on the bench, and I was concerned. I was like, that's kind of unusual for just an ankle thing. He's questionable for tomorrow night. I expect him to play. He said after the game he was going to play. Ginobili kind of expressed some concern after the game. He was like, the fact that he couldn't go was a bad sign because Kawhi plays through everything. But, you know...
Yeah, and isn't this the kind of thing that will often hurt more like the next day and day after than right in the moment where, like, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he missed Game 6.
I would be a little shocked. I just can't believe that he's just inhuman, so I don't.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just don't. It was, okay, so this tweet kind of blew up, so I'll share it with the listeners. Danny Green post-game, San Antonio's beat, one of San Antonio's Express News' beat writers, she asked Danny Green, she was like, "Was Kawhi, did you talk to Kawhi? Was he any pain? How is he?" And Danny answered, "Well, I talked to him. You can't really tell because his expression doesn't really change." And we all just started, like, cracking up. It was really pretty amazing. I think he'll probably play. I think he'll probably play well. What I keep looking at with these two series is I think I have a really sneaking suspicion that the Wizards are better than the Celtics and the Rockets are better than the Spurs, and the Spurs and the Celtics are going to advance. And that's just my feeling on where these series are at. I think a lot of it's just based on home court. And that tells you why home court is so important and why the regular season matters. Is I think if these series were flipped in terms of where the games were, things would feel a lot different. But they're not. And that's kind of where we're headed. One more thing. We're over time, but I did want to do one more thing. If you don't know, Danny Green is an amazing basketball player. And he never gets the credit that he deserves. San Antonio doesn't let anyone talk to the media. So I've wanted to do a feature on him for years, and it's never going to happen. But Green does his job. He defended everybody last night. He got burned by Harden because Harden's a tough cover, obviously, being an MVP candidate. But he just made play after play after play. He made the bucket to put them ahead, which wound up being the winning shot in terms of actually a field goal made. He was everywhere. He closed out hard. He's so smart. Like, Danny Green's just a really underappreciated player. Hey guys, I want to tell you about Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. I'm on the road and cannot wait to get back and cook. I really miss being at home and making good home-cooked meals, and Blue Apron is the best way to do that. They're going to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, and they do this with a sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron has established partnerships with 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States, so the seafood is sourced sustainably with standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Their beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals, and the produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. It can be delivered in 99% of the U.S. You can get it wherever you are. Cooking is going to make your family stronger, too. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often, and you're going to save money because if you're spending a lot at restaurants or high-end grocery chains, I've got 2 kids, so which means that I'm always eating out, and I want to try and get away from that. With Blue Apron, you can do it for under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Upcoming meals include spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza with olives, bell peppers, and ricotta salata. Sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. That sounds amazing. Parmesan-crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. Baby broccoli and fontina paninis with hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. Not all ingredients are created equal, and fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. It's affordable, you get great variety, it's flexible, you can customize your recipes for whatever fits your schedule, it's easy, they come with step-by-step instructions, and everything can be done in under 40 minutes. And it's guaranteed. The Blue Apron's Freshest Guarantee promises that every great ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they're going to make it right. Check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/IONNBA. You'll love how it feels and what the experience is like to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/IONNBA. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Here's what I want to talk to you about. There's the Kyle Lowry Philadelphia conversation that we started the other day has really started in earnest. If you're Philadelphia, let's talk about, take this from a different angle. If you're Philadelphia, what's the upside of adding veterans at this point in your development process?
I think the upside is establishing to the rest of the league, like, we're not we're not a rebuilding team anymore, and we're not kidding around. And like, if you get somebody like Lowry, automatically expectations are playoffs. Like that's what it is. If you go into the season with Lowry and a healthy Embiid, that's what you're shooting for in the Eastern Conference. And if you don't make it, it'd be considered a failure, I think. So look, it's an interesting move if they can make it. And I think there's still, to me, like, a lot of this reminds me of, like, oh, the Sixers are going to sign Manu Ginobili. No, they're not. Like, he's using the Sixers for leverage, and he's going to stay with the Spurs because he's Manu Ginobili, and he spent his whole career with the Spurs. So if this is what makes Toronto offer the fifth year, and then great job by Lowry and his representatives. If he actually does go to Philly, I think it would be such a bold move from him. And, I mean, he'd get to play at home. I think he'd actually fit pretty well there, because they want Ben Simmons to create a lot of plays, and like, Lowry's an awesome spot up shooter, and he's good with or without the ball. So I think there are ways it could work really well basketball wise. But I do think, you know, like we talked about last time, it's like he said he wants a ring. I don't know how you can say publicly all I care about is a ring and then go to Philly. As great as Embiid is, I find it hard to actually picture that happening.
Rudy Gay is still considering his opt out, or he's going to have to opt out, right? That's the news.
Yeah, he's definitely opting out.
Coming off an Achilles, he adapted to that kind of stretch four role really well. He might be more valuable in a modern NBA if you can get him with the right coach. Is there anybody that you think should take a flyer on him for what he's going to cost?
I mean, we were talking about the Jazz earlier. If they can finagle enough space, he'd be sort of like another Joe Johnson-y type that can get them a bucket and can play multiple positions.
He's going to sign for the minimum with the Warriors, isn't he?
I mean, he could. Honestly, I don't like – I think if you're him and you're coming off an Achilles, nobody's going to want to invest a long-term contract at big money. So I think what you could do is sign like a 1+1 with a good team. Where you think you can play an important role and kind of show teams like I can still get buckets and I can play small ball four and I still have some athleticism after this injury. And if you do that and if you're efficient, then at that point you can get your big contract next summer. So maybe like he looks at a team where he can have a big role like outside of the playoffs, but I mean, think about how long it's been since he's played a meaningful NBA game. So I would anticipate he takes somewhat of a smaller role on a like guaranteed playoff team because I imagine he is really itching to get back there.
Yeah. Maybe the
Memphis would be interesting if he went back there.
Maybe the Hawks? That might not be a bad idea.
I don't know if he's a Hawksy player, though. I mean, maybe he's not a Jazzy player either, but I mean, it could work. They're certainly a different team than they were 2 years ago.
If the Grizzlies let JaMychal Green go and sign Rudy Gay, the fans are going to riot. FedEx Forum will be pelted with fried items. Is what will happen in that instance?
They have to keep Green.
He's really he's high on my list for free agents. I'm working on it right now and. You know, I've got, where's he at? He's 18th. JaMychal Green is the 18th best free agent in this class. And he might even wind up higher if I think about it some more. Like, I mean, Andre Iguodala is 16th. This, I cannot stress enough to you, dear listener, the free agency class this year is bad. It's so bad. Dude, if you want your team to get major upgrades, hope for draft night trades. And hope they just keep their money. Like, just keep your money. The class this year is not good. And there's a lot of... It's not just that they're not good. It's that there are so many, like, I don't know about that, guys. Like, Drew Holiday, I've been a huge supporter of for years. And Drew Holiday, I'm looking at it and I'm like, injury prone. You know, has had issues in terms of, like, hasn't been a part of a really good team. He's a good shooter and he's a good passer. There's so many things I like about him, but like, he's 10th. He's 10th right now on my list. Like, you know, Danilo Gallinari is 12th.
Wow, that's higher than I would have expected for him.
Nerlens Noel is 13th, because with Gallo, he's one of the only guys that's available. Part of my evaluation system is, like, how likely are you to get him, right? Like, Gallo you can go get. You can't go get.
Yeah.
There are other guys that you cannot go get. Like, they're not going to let him go. That's honestly why Iguodala is behind him. Iguodala is probably more valuable at this point than Gallo because of his intelligence and playmaking and all the stuff that he brings to the table. But and price. Like, Iguodala is going to be way cheaper. But Iguodala ain't leaving. Iguodala knows, but like, Iguodala is smart enough to know a good thing when he's got one. Like, you're going to have to pay through the nose if you want Andre Iguodala at an advanced age. Like, because otherwise he's going to be like, I'll just re-sign with the Warriors and keep winning titles. You know? Like, why would you leave? Like, Taj Gibson's 15th. I have Nerlens Noel 13th, which I'm still debating whether or not that's right or not.
Yeah, I mean, rankings are tough because, like, how do you compare Nerlens Noel and Danilo Gallinari? Like, these are completely different players.
Well, it's not just that. It's like Nerlens.
Nerlens might get a max.
Yeah, Nerlens like, might get a max. Like, do you want Nerlens Noel on the max? Is a very big question. If you're Dallas, you don't have any choice. Like, if you're Dallas, you're like, we do not have a better option here.
Yeah, and Dallas also has a lot of money to spend. So they can do that. It doesn't kill them to give him the rookie max extension.
I have to move somebody up. Like, I have Jonathan Simmons like 43rd because some of this is left over from preseason. And Jonathan Simmons, I have to put it like number two now because apparently he's LeBron. So
yeah, put him all the way at number two for sure. Yeah,
he's amazing. Any closing thoughts on stuff that's gone on? Do you have thoughts on things?
I'm interested to see this Wizards-Celtics game tonight. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's going to be happening, or it's going to have happened by the time you're listening to this. And I thought their defense like made the Celtics look like they didn't know how to play basketball. It was weird. Like they sent so much help at Isaiah. He made some bad decisions, and you can't do that against the Wizards because they'll just score in transition every single time. And I've loved the makeup of the Celtics all year. I like the spacing that they have. When they have Horford at the five, they think, like, in theory, they have the pieces and they have the style of play that should be able to deal with that. But I was kind of spooked by that insane run that happened in the last game. Cause I was like, you knew this was coming. Like, maybe they were a bit more aggressive and just their sheer athleticism and speed was a little overwhelming, but you knew this was happening and you still coughed it up over and over and over against them. And that's the one thing you knew going into the series, they couldn't afford to cough it up against them. And so I'm going to be watching this with just like, how sharp are the Celtics? Can they just clean things up on offense? Because I think if they can just kind of play the starters even, like I've said this all along, if they can play the starters somewhat close to even, then their bench will take care of the rest. Like that's kind of how I see it. But the starters just killed them in the last two games.
For those of you that prefer, that enjoy certain sports propositions in terms of gambling, you should check out Sportsline, and you should check out Larry Hartstein, who is on an insane run right now, picking games against the spread in the NBA. He was 10-0 earlier this week.
Was he like 10-0?
He was 10-0. I think he may have gone to 11-0 after last night, but he's been absolutely lights out. Check that out at Sportsline, and we're running a special right now where you can get a discount rate on all their premium content. Make sure to check that out as well. Okay, that'll wrap it up for this edition of the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. We will be back tomorrow in advance of Game 6 here in Houston. Thanks for listening. Check us out on all your various apps and things, and leave us reviews and stuff like that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Matt.